Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I remain Justin.
What is up? I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we review a bunch of comics that have come out this week. Let's kick it off with X-Men 97, number one from Marvel, written by Steve Fox, art by Salva Espin. This is the official prequel to the sequel of X-Men, the animated series. It is. It kicks
Wait, so
up.
It takes
Keep
place
going.
before the TV show starts? Is that what you're saying?
Nope. It takes place before X-Men 97, after X-Men, the animated series. But it is official. It does kick it off and includes a lot of plot lines there, including Jean Grey being pregnant. She's not quite super pregnant yet, but she's letting Cyclops know about it. We meet Mr. Sinister for the first time, I believe, or maybe he came back. I honestly don't know. I never really watched that show. Anyway.
So it's like X-Men 98 is what you're saying.
Nope.
No.
This
it's
is
X-Men
a number.
96.
96. Okay.
Go if you know way. How years / numbers work.
Well,
numbers
I
and years
got,
work
I got
similarly.
Very confused about what it was before and after there. Mm-hmm. But it seems like it's exactly like the cartoon, but just a little bit different. You know what I mean?
Give us some characterization there. What do you like it? Do you dislike that?
Well, it's like, hey.
Give us the straight Pete.
You know, and this one, you know, in the cartoon that just dropped from Disney, you know, Cyclops and Jean Grey are going to leave the team because they're like, yo, we want to, you know, just be together. And in this one, it's like, Jean is pregnant and they're going to, you know, I mean, that's going to pull them off the team right there. So, I mean, they're similar ideas. They're just little differences. It feels like subtle, little nuanced differences.
Because this happened before that, this comic. And I will say this just feels like, you know, this flavor is nice. I think we've all agreed that we like this flavor of X-Men. And so this is just a
so
nice
little
mid-flavor.
So they're going hard on it. Yeah.
Yeah,
what
but
do you
like
think
if you're
about. So I agree with you, Justin. I agree with what you're saying that it's Steve Fox, particularly in the writing, perfectly channels everything that we liked about the first two episodes of X-Men 97. It feels like the same tone, it feels classic. There's people quipping and making jokes while they're fighting. A million things happen in this issue. So it channels all of that. I did have a little bit of a qualm of, like, the reason that I'm enjoying X-Men 97 is it feels like the comic books put on screen. So to put it back in the comic books, I'm like, but I already know that. That's what it came from, you know? So there is that aspect of it a little bit.
Certainly, but I would also argue this is a flavor that the X-Men comics aren't giving us right now, are not planning on giving us based on what we've read, and haven't given to us in a long time. So I don't mind it. I actually like it in comic book form because this feels like they've boiled down a lot of the characters to a continuity-free, like, core personality. And honestly, like, I've been missing that in my main X-Men stuff, because it's so continuity heavy.
This is a good classic X-Men comic, all of my qualms are external, which are not fair, not to be confused with the externals. Of
you
course.
Mean the externals, like in season two of the X-Men, original 92 animated series, where it's the thing that the Belladonna and the Gambit's warring League of Assassins and League of Thieves have to give tithe to. And when the tithe is incorrect, they are punished, where one whoever is in charge of giving the tithe is then killed, while the other person on the other side of the other guild is given a superpower. In this case, Belladonna is given superpowers, and then when Gambit, we flash back to it, and then he has to come back in the future, the X-Men show up. And that's when the external kills a bunch of them and ends up hurting a lot of the different X-Men. But Gambit has to come in and then saves the day, despite the fact that he's married to Belladonna, which is a trying situation for him and Rogue, who are just having a budding relationship, despite the fact that this is a cartoon for kids where relationships involving complications is sort of a strange thing.
Well, no, what he's saying is, like, internally he's very happy, but externally his hands don't like it.
Oh, not externals. Got it.
Yeah.
I like this.
I understood weirdly what Justin was saying. I did not understand what Pete was saying.
Oh, that's crazy. That's actually the definition of insanity, if you understood what I said. I've been rewatching the X-Men cartoon, and I'll tell you what, I love it. It's so intense. At certain points, the X-Men aren't even the main characters. There's there are two episodes in season two where it's Cable and Bishop fighting over the time stream and whose like broken time stream should remain, and the X-Men barely factor into it. It's crazy.
Great stuff. Let's move on to another alternate timeline with Batman Dark Age number one for DC Comics, written by Mark Russell, art by Mike Allred. This is spinning out of Superman's space age, and I believe, though I'm not sure about this, but I believe it exists in the same continuity where we saw a Batman who is already operating. Now we're jumping back and seeing a younger Batman as he builds up to the Batman we know he is going to be. I was really looking forward to this because I love this team. I love the writer. I love the artist. I love Superman Space Age. And this does not disappoint. It is darker per the title, but I really thought it worked. What about you guys?
Well, this is like tripped out Batman. Like, you know, when they did Silver Surfer and that was really fun and tripped out. So I was excited to see what
Mike
they were taking.
Did.
Yes, the Allred team. I feel like this, I was excited to see what they were going to kind of bring to this. And I thought it was very cool. You know, we've seen the Batman origin story, God knows how many times, but I still had fun with this. I wasn't upset about the fact that we're getting the origin story again because it's so different looking and kind of tripped out and unique and kind of interesting. So also some amazing covers and artwork. So worth it for the art alone.
I also really enjoy this. This adds a little bit of tone of humor to Batman that we rarely get. Appreciate that. It almost has the tone, a very like James Dean energy, like the marvelous Mr. Batman in the marvelous Ms. Maisel fame. The Allred art is fantastic, and it's a nice alternate history that makes me want to see this tone brought through into the main continuity. So definitely going to keep reading this.
The Goon, Them That Don't Stay Dead, number one from Dark Horse Comics by Eric Powell. Let's bring back the character The Goon, as you could probably figure out from the title. And here he is fighting against a kid who is holding a duck among other villains. I'll tell you what, I miss The Goon.
It's great to have The Goon back. Also, like, you know, I think every neighborhood had that weird kid who was walking around with a duck. You just stay away from that kid. You know what I mean? You don't go. You don't engage. You try to keep your distance. I mean, I love The Goon so much. Just seeing the art, the tone of it, it just brings you. I was transported to such a fun, crazy place. It was just so nice to kind of be back in the pages that Eric Powell creates. It's such an insane, cool world, and it's a ton of fun.
Yeah, you love The Goon getting it on.
What?
The Goon hooking up.
Yeah. He has sex in the closet.
Yeah, sure. Sometimes The Goon gets lucky every once in a while. You know, it's part of the story.
Yeah. No, I know. That's what I'm saying. I'm just saying you like that.
I I didn't like it any more than anybody else or whatever. I don't know what you're trying to insinuate.
When you read the issue, you texted me and said, the goon got some poon. And I was like, okay, that's a little much.
I'm not sure. That's yours.
You're like, that's not what we want.
I did not say that on the podcast.
Exactly. I think I waited and said, please don't say that on the podcast. And here we are.
Yeah, I think it was your 9-year-old son who texted you and said that to you.
Gross. I don't know what you're getting at. I love the fact that Eric Powell is able to do these goofy comedy situations and then completely hit you with the emotions a page later.
And the horror side of it as well.
Yeah. There's a lot of different tones that he's balancing here, and it constantly works.
It's impressive.
Duke number 4 from Image Comics /Skybound, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Tom Riley. In this issue, Duke is escaping from prison with the Baroness and fighting a bunch of other G.I. Joe characters as G.I. Joe things happen.
I got excited when you said Riley because I was like, are you talking about Riley Trahan? But it's Tom Riley. It's great.
Tom Riley Trahan. Yeah.
Same. Different. Yeah. Same. Now, Pete. A lot of Joe stuff happening.
Oh my God. It's so exciting.
We get a time where they literally march out with a bunch of tanks and stuff, like a commercial. And then at the end, we get a huge character revelation.
Yes.
Which is, I want to say his name is Colonel Crabclaw. And tell me if I'm wrong or right.
You're way off.
Okay.
Dude, First off, I just want to say the kid in me, the G.I. Joe loving kid, is having such a blast. I don't know if this
trans- Sorry to interrupt you. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Pete. That kid is not in you. You are that kid. That kid is outside of you. The adult you is inside the kid you. The kid is not inside the adult.
I don't know if that's how it works.
We flip the script a little bit. We're out.
So instead of an inner child, I have an outer child, is what you're saying?
You have an inner adult. Let me be honest. That adult is like 17 max. Just say it.
Face down, kid out. That's the way I like to pout. You know?
That's another thing we texted you not to say on the podcast. Yeah. Anyways, I don't know if this translates to as much fun as you guys are having, but this is such a blast and such a fun thing that they're doing with these kind of like character reveals that if you were a big G.I. Joe head, you were like, oh my God,
it's Dr. McOvalhand.
It's a bat, dude. It's a bat. It's a battle android trooper. It's a bat.
Okay. Let me talk about this for a second because I also had no idea what was going on here at the end here. I was trying to game through this in my head a little bit, and I think the place that I netted out is Joshua Williamson was doing a good job of, if you know G.I. Joe, you're like, oh, shit, it's a bat. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
But otherwise, he's working under the premise of, like, a dude who has a claw hand who is holding our hero is cool and terrifying. And I think it works on that level. Like, to be perfectly honest, I wanted to rail against it and joke about it exactly like you're doing, Justin. But when I was thinking about it, I was like, no, this is a cool image. This is
Justin.
Great villain. And fuck you, Justin. How dare you?
I hear you. I agree with you. Fuck Justin.
Yeah! It's unanimous. Wow, we're having fun.
No, it's great to see old robot Nux out there. Revealed for all of us to see. No, but let me just say, I actually do really enjoy this. I love making fun of G.I. Joe because it's a funny idea that something that was named by people who worked at a toy marketing company is now something that we're really building stories around. Joshua Williamson is doing a great job of doing that. And Tom Riley's art is fantastic. And Duke as a character is great. He's like, has such great Captain America energy, modernized and given that sort of, it's like Captain America and Nomad combined into one piece, happening at the same time rather than like a switch that has to flip in the Captain America universe.
Jackpot and Black Cat, number 1 from Marvel, written by Celeste Bronfman, art by Amelia Lazo, per the title. This is Mary Jane and Felicia Hardy are teaming up to solve a, I don't know, weird mystery, I guess is what we call it. Basically, there's somebody who is digitally manipulating people first to kill Jackpot, and then Black Cat gets in the mix as well. There's some emotional stuff going on. Of course, we get Paul, the man in the chair, coming back.
The man in the chair and the man with the ring.
Yes. What?
Married to Mary Jane.
What's going on?
He puts the married in Mary Jane right there. Right? Married Jane. I mean, I like this. I know we get a lot of Jackpot in this month's or this week's stack.
Yeah, there's a lot of Jackpot happening.
And, you know, frankly, Tiger, you just hit the Jackpot is what I like to say. And I like it. I like Mary Jane in this role. The powers are, we're definitely seeing her powers on display. Every time we see Jackpot, it's like, what about this? What about this? It's like gambling. I'm a gambling addict based on reading these comics. I like her team up with Black Cat. I appreciated it a little bit more when there was the emotional issue between them where Black Cat was dating Peter and was sort of having a hard time talking about that with Mary Jane, and they worked it out and developed a friendship. It's advanced in this issue where it's like, hey, friends tell each other stuff. And I think that's a great second step. I want them to have a little bit more time, I guess, teaming up. So I assume we're going to get more of that going forward. This is sort of walking us into that. But I think the art is very cool. It's nice. It's very close-up type comic book art. This is fun.
The Penguin, number 8 from DC Comics, written by Tom.
That means everybody liked it, right? Because I talked about it.
Yeah, yeah.
And no one else did. Uh-huh. Just I did.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we but all everyone else. And agreed. Written by Tom King, art by Rafael Delatorre.
Wow.
In this issue, the Penguin returns to Gotham City. We got a little bit of a flashback the past two issues. Now he is taking it directly to the city. And a lot of this issue is spent with him just walking around and riling up tensions. Man, I love this series. This is one of the tensest reads of the week, I think. Just like the palpable feeling of, not to call out a ridiculous reference, but if you guys remember from the Simpsons episode where there's the one ninja standing on the lawn and everybody's like, Homer's like, what's he going to do? When's he going to do something? And then he looks away and he misses it. But like, that's this whole comic book is like, oh God, when is Penguin going to do something? And right. He does something like he always does every issue. There's some sort of moment, but the tension building up to that is so palpable that every issue you could feel it dripping off of the writing and the art. This is great.
Yeah, I agree. Like the way that Tom King has put the Penguin sort of at the center of Gotham City in this series in a good way, but also built up this great cast of characters around. Like, the Help has just been elevated so hard. The Help could have killed Batman in this issue, and it's played really well. But I want to highlight the Riddler section. Like, I feel like this is some of the best Riddler, like, explanatory panels I've seen in a long time where he's just constantly riddling in his head. Mm-hmm. He's having a conversation with the Penguin, and he's just like, it's just like, da, 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 like spiraling riddles. And the Penguin's like, hey man, you're smart enough to be the smartest in the world, smart as Lex. And the Riddler's like, yeah, but what if a hat was wearing on a donkey's head or something? It's sort of like, yes, this is why how he's broken. And it's one of the best just showing why a character is the way they are that you don't see very often. This is a great thing to just show to a stranger who wants to know about the Riddler.
Let me just say before Pete offers his opinion, I also want to mention there's an element, and I don't say this derogatorily, of Tom King showing off in this book where he's like,
deaf.
As a writer, I can encompass many different viewpoints because every other page switches between viewpoints, has other people narrating the action, and they all are different voices. And like, that's something that every writer should do, but it is hard to do and does not happen all the time. It's very impressive.
I would argue this whole Penguin book is a Tom King flex. I feel like that energy has been there throughout. And I think he's absorbed it into a lot of the characters. But this whole comic feels like Tom King being like, let me see how far I can go, and bringing that energy to the Penguin and some of the other characters.
Yep. Pete?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time with what to root for here, because we can't root for the Penguin. He's clearly an asshole and has been the whole time. So it's hard to ride this long with somebody who is so despicable. I mean, I appreciate him stomping on the Riddler, because I was like, yeah, get this guy to shut the fuck up. This is annoying as hell. So
you don't like riddles?
No, I don't.
What do you think? What do you feel about Gru from Despicable Me? Because you're saying like you don't like people.
I thought you were talking about Gru, like the Conan our bear, but cartoonish Conan kind of.
Every time you bring up a minion related thing? I feel like it happens every episode.
It seems like you shoo in minions pretty hard.
He grews it. He doesn't shoo it.
All I gotta say is illumination, right? You know.
Nice. That's making money. Ooh. Pete, what's your favorite butler, the help or Alfred? If you had
Alfred.
Oh, interesting.
No question.
But the help's alive and Alfred is dead.
How dare you? Rest in peace.
Very hard for a dead butler to get you sandwiches.
That sounds like a great Riddler riddle right there.
How does a dead butler get you sandwiches? The sun.
That's good. That's medium. We're going to work on that.
We'll workshop it.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 18 from Marvel, written by Cody Ziegler, art by David Marquez, Sarah Pacelli, Juan Cabral, Matt Horak, Luciana Vecchio, and Federico Vingentini. Let me just say, I want to walk you guys through. I know nobody cares about this, but I want to walk you guys through my thought process here. When I saw this many artists on it, I was like, oh, this is going to be an art jam giving us the history of Miles Morales. It's the 300th issue where he's appeared. We're paying tribute to the anniversary. Let's go. That is not what it is. It is a full-length adventure written by Cody Ziegler, where Miles and a team try to take down another team that is trying to take them down, who have been powered up by Rambler. Is that the name of the character?
Definitely not. I want to say it's Rabble.
Rabble. So I went into this and I was like, I kind of wanted to feel things about Miles Morales' history, so I was disappointed there. But conversely, when I came out of this comic book, I really appreciated the fact that they gave Cody Ziegler all of this space to play around with one story, because I feel like you don't get that a lot in this sort of issue. Usually it is that sort of like, we're doing a bunch of short stories. Here's a bunch of different eras of Miles Morales. And this felt like something different that is in the current continuity. And I was impressed and appreciative of that.
Wow.
I
feel like this was just such a great action-packed issue. You get like awesome splash pages, tons of kind of like cool, just kind of comic team up moments. I thought this was a ton of fun and really well paced and amazingly drawn.
Yeah, it was a big issue. I feel like this is true for this issue and perhaps the other Amazing Spider-Man issue we're going to talk about in a little bit. Both of these titles feel a little lost in the sauce. Like, I want a little reset. I want a little get back to core stuff, because there's just so much going on. Venom Sword. There's like Rabble's like this villain where there's so many different characters in here. There's different allegiances. He's trying to help Rabble. He's trying to like fight Rabble. That like I feel like I need for a lot of the Spider-Man universe to just come to rest for a second and then sort of spin off into the directions that it wants to go in.
So why don't we just...
Oh, go ahead, Pete.
I was just going to say, so your main complaint is you're too old for this comic book.
It's not about being too old.
Seems like you can't take all the action. You know what I mean? You need things slowed down a little bit because you got to rest.
There's not a lot of like character here. It's just like, I got to go do this. I got to go do that. I got to go do all these things.
Right.
And it may be that it's been a while from the emotional core that got us here. But like, I guess I just want to like, I didn't dislike this. I really like Miles. And I even like the progression of his power set and everything. But
plus the art's great too. You agree
art's
with
great
that?
Too. Yeah. 100%. Okay, but I guess I just want, some simplicity in these stories that feel like there's just so much plot on top of everything.
Well, let's get to something that's super simple. Sam and Twitch Case Files, number one from Image Comics, written by Todd McFarlane and John Goff, art by Simon Kondransky. This is taking place after the big Spawn 350, 300. I honestly forget the issue, but
1 million?
One kabillion. A bunch of big changes have happened in the Spawn universe, and two characters who are definitely not Commissioner Gordon and Harvey Bullock are investigating mysteries.
How
dare
you?
Are they different? Defend yourself, Pete.
Yes, they are different. Sam and Twitch, part of the original Spawn series way back when it started, is a fun kind of take on dealing with kind of all the other activities and all the crime and stuff that are in Spawn's world that may or may not connect to what Spawn has going on.
Here's what I will say I liked about this issue, because I'm not the biggest fan of Sam and Twitch in general. Oof. I think the lettering was wild.
Interesting. Great highlight.
It really was. Like, it's, I don't know if this was in the previous Sam and Twitch series, to be honest with you, but
I don't believe so.
No.
They're typed out with no bubbles, so it feels like a case file, which is purposeful, which is off-putting, but engages you as a reader. The other thing that I would throw out there is Simon Kondransky, who does some fantastic art. I think having the lack of bubbles in particular really emphasizes his art, which is always fantastic. So,
great idea.
From an artistic perspective, I thought this was a very interesting issue. From a plot perspective,
well, what I appreciate is by not having kind of the bubble or a different background, it does let you kind of stay in the world of the art more, which I really appreciate. Highlights the, you know, not taking away from the scene of what's happening, which I think is a really cool thing. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. Very dynamic, very cool, kind of a fun Case Files take on everything that is going on. But, to me, like, seeing Sam and Twitch again was exciting and fun to be like, oh, I miss these guys. Oh, it's nice to be back with them. Let's kind of get into their kind of crime alley type of Gotham type of kind of dark.
Oh, Gotham? Why would you say Gotham? What characters are they like in Gotham City?
Well, and let me, go after all your words, but what do you like about these guys?
Well, you got one of them that is smarter, and then the other one that's the muscle. They're definitely not what Alex said.
Because the thing I like, I appreciate the comparison that Alex is making, but the two of them, I'm like, Sam is just like this mean mess who's like not fun. And then Twitch is sort of like, yeah, I hate him too, but I'm along for the ride. My name's Twitch, like the streaming platform. He says that a lot.
He doesn't say it once.
I want to have some fun in here in some capacity, or know about these people in a way that makes me interested. And it just feels like they're like, well, you know what sucks? Life. Here we go.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, well, we'll see. The small universe is rapidly expanding over the course of this year. Why don't we move on to another universe with Ultimate Spider-Man, number 3 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman, art by Marco Cicchetto. In this issue, our 30-ish-year-old Spider-Man is trying out some new costumes with his daughter, and then comes into conflict with Ultimate Bullseye and teams up with Ultimate Green Goblin. I will say I was iffy about this in the first issue, but I like this more and more every issue. And like the way this issue in particular was paced out, I think a lot of this is down to maybe it's how Hickman is scripting out the thing, but the way that Cicchetto is laying out the panels, there is so much cinematic tension in terms of what's going on here. Things like scenes where Ben Urich and Ben Parker.
Not Ben Urich, Ben Parker.
Ben Parker, yeah. And J. Jonah Jameson are planning out their newspaper, and Peter happens to be there, and there's just close-ups on his face. The thing at the end, spoiler here, but where Harry takes over Peter's costume and it reveals both of them is like, you want to get a drink? Man, this like, I know this is the worst compliment for a comic book, but like this feels like watching a movie while you're reading it. It's phenomenal. It's great.
I'll compliment it in a different way. It just feels like it's core Spider-Man mythology, just like remixed in a way that is working. And
remix. Yeah,
I mean, agree. I love it. The only, like, I think the art is fantastic. I love the characterizations of everybody. I love the, like, Ben Parker, J. Jonah team up, the way they're just, like, buddies. Hank Sash and Peter Parker's the weird one there is so fun. The family element is really cool. The only thing that, and this bothers me across Marvel, I'm like, why is Bullseye so juiced up all the time? Everyone's like, oh no, it's Bullseye. He throws cards. How hard can you throw a card?
Deadly cards, motherfucker.
I don't care if he's a Bullseye at throwing a card, it's still just bouncing
off
my stuff.
Have you ever gotten a paper cut?
Yeah, a real bad one.
No, like here's
he's hitting pressure points, dude.
No, I've thought about the paper cut aspect here. It's not a paper cut slides. A paper cut slides across. Bullseye's whole thing is hitting a point. It's not a slide. It's a point. He's hitting a point. So I'm just saying, it doesn't. No, the math doesn't add up that Bullseye's throwing a card through steel.
Yep.
He's not super powered.
He knows the weak point in the steel, man.
No, he doesn't. That's not even in his power set. His power set is being able to be like, oh, I threw. He'd be great at beer pong. He should be great at beer pong. That's his whole thing.
He is good at it.
He should be called beer pong. I really like his ultimate costume, I would say.
Yes, cool. I just feel like he's so juiced up, it bothers me. But otherwise, great issue.
I thought this was kind of a touching issue. I like this idea of like, all right, what are we doing differently in this Ultimate Universe? What if people had friends? You know what I mean? It's nice to see J. Jonah Jameson not an asshole. He's got a friend. He's got a buddy. And guess what? Spider-Man doesn't have to fight the Green Goblin. They can be friends.
That's a great what if.
I was like, I love this. I love this ultimate world. It doesn't always have to be these giant battles. It can just be some people being like, take off your mask. Let's get a drink, man.
Love to see. I know where they're doing what if Venom right now, but if they did what if people had friends with just a cover of like C.B. Sobolski crying, that would be so beautiful.
It got real very specific and behind the curtain there with the CB Sobolski.
Yeah. No, I'm saying like he would be so happy. He would be so happy.
Yeah, really beautiful.
Well, anyway, Alan Scott, the Green Lantern number 5 from DC Comics, written by Tim Sheridan, art by Cian Torme. And this issue, big stuff going down as Alan Scott is battling his ex-boyfriend, the Red Lantern. Some big revelations come out. Oh, my God. The emotion in every issue of this is pouring out of the pages. I am so impressed with what's going on here. And, you know, there's been a fair amount of digital ink spilled about the JSA stuff that came out with Geoff Johns. He clearly, I don't know, got distracted is probably the best way of saying it with the Ghost Machine stuff. So he wasn't able to push through JSA. We got all these miniseries, but like, spoiler here, when the JSA shows up again, I was like, pump the fist in the air moment. It's great.
Agree. And let me just say, this is, I was criticizing the Spider-Man books before. This is like the flip of it, where it's emotion-led stories that have a ton of plot in a good way. Like, this feels like it is, it's so emotional. The art's really superhero-y, and the action is superhero-y, but at its core, it's about, like, this emotional loss. We get some great like mythology building with the Green Lantern, the Alan Scott Green Lantern, mm-hmm. which is something that has never quite fit with the larger Green Lantern mythology. And I think they do a decent job of sliding that in. I think this series has been just great top to bottom.
Yeah, I agree. It's been awesome and really well done. There was one part that was a little weird where they were like, oh man, when you're a Red Lantern, you can't keep that up. And then all these like bad guy Red Lanterns showed up, and then they weren't worried about that at all. Because I was just like, well, what happened? That whole kind of plot thing just kind of went out the window. But other than that, I'm really impressed with not only what they're saying, how they're saying it, and the art style is fantastic.
Gods, number 6 from Marvel, written by Jonathan Hickman once again, art by Valerio Schiti. In this issue, our main female character is going on a journey to help the other female character. There's a lot of continuity stuff going on here, but basically this is like a journey to the underworld style issue.
Yeah.
Main thing I wanted to ask you guys off of this issue, and this is a spoiler for the end. At the end of the issue, she's asked, give me your eyes or live for 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Which would you choose?
Well, the weird part was, and you know, this is huge spoilers, is that earlier she's like, you got to tell the truth for 24 hours or I get one eye. And then later the fox is like, yo, it's two eyes now, and you gotta lie. I was like, well, that's easier than telling the truth. What the fuck is the problem? And then the next time you see her, she's got no eyes, and you're like, why? Well, you can't lie?
Here's the part you're missing, which is the trap that the fox proposes. The first guardian there is like, you could have to tell the truth or give me an eye. And he's like, hey, be careful what you agree to, because you never know what you might end up with. Like, someone later could ask you to tell a lie in the same period, then you would be driven mad because you can't tell the truth and lie in one 24-hour period. And she's like, yeah. I telling the truth is always the right answer. She says she'll tell the truth for 24 hours and then goes through, makes a bunch of other promises. At the end, he gives her that same question. He finally has his turn to offer her a price. Yeah. And he's like, I want both your eyes, or I will make you tell lies for 24 hours, which, as he said before, would drive her mad and ruin and erase her from existence, essentially. So the fox does the classic myth thing of telling you what he's going to do as a trick and then doing it at the end, which I really enjoyed.
It's a classic, you know, don't trust the golden fox, Max.
But listen, I'm giving up. I'm spending eye. I go to Target. I'm like, yeah, one eye. Whatever you guys need. I just need to get out of here with these Clorox wipes and whatever else is in my cart.
This is a great issue. I still don't quite get this series as a whole. And it is ending with issue 8. Or at least taking a pause with issue 8. But I like it. The art is good. The writing is good.
I think this was one of the first issues that I really liked because it's kind of reminds me of an old tale where you're supposed to learn something, and it's kind of like this kind of huge fantastical story, which I think works well for this God's title. I thought it was not only artistically really well done, but it's an interesting tale that kind of stays with you afterwards. So I think it kind of checks all those boxes. I think this is an interesting kind of thing to do. I don't see how it relates to the Marvel universe, but I still think it's fun.
If it's ending in eight and or taking a pause at eight and it's Hickman, like, surely he'll come back to it. There's no way he would just abandon it.
He hates it when you call him Shirley.
Yeah. So I agree with you. It doesn't make a ton of sense why it is Marvel when this could just be a standalone title. But I will say it feels like Hickman sort of saying, like, let me do a little Sandman-esque departure in the Marvel universe, get into the larger mythological elements underneath it and build this whole little world. And it's interesting. I've enjoyed every issue of this. It just make the way that it's setting up storytelling makes me want to read this for 30 issues, not eight.
But the one thing I want to talk about, and I don't mean to derail the stack here, but if somebody has no problem telling the truth for 24 hours, they're like, yeah, that's easy. Why is it so hard to lie for 24 hours after that? I figure
it's
like
the same. It's not after. It's the same 24-hour period.
Oh, you can't lie. Well, that's completely different. I thought this was like the next day. I was like, What's the big deal? Just go the other direction for the next 24 hours. You know,
no, the like, whole why? Point is you can't both agree to tell the truth for 24 hours and lie for 24 hours. That's the trap. Like, I know you're in a 24-hour lie.
But what's crazy is she was like straight up, like, instead of trying to tell the truth and keeping an eye, she goes, fuck it, take both of them. I'm just going to like.
I'd figure it out. I want my eyes. Why don't we move on and talk about local man.
What do they do
girl.
With all those eyes is my question. Why is eyes so important?
Bucket of eyes.
Well, why is Mephisto collecting marriages? That doesn't make any sense. That's your thing.
Bucket of marriages. Local man, bad girls from Image Comics by Tony Fleeks and Tim Seeley. This is a one-shot spinning out of Local Man, but at the same time, super important for the ongoing continuity of the issue as we get a character named Neon who is talking to our main human character, who has been behind everything. This is three short tales from back in the day that illuminate how she's feeling. Another great essential one-shot from this team that loops in a bunch of Image characters. This series is great.
I just love everything they're doing with this series. They're just being so smart. They're pushing the like borders of what comics are in so many ways. We've talked about the issue from a couple back of the main series where our local man dropped into the ads and stuff. This is pushing through into a standalone issue that is sort of like filling time in some ways, but at the same time, it's advancing the story in an extreme way, telling us great backstory, fleshing out the world. This is just maybe my favorite universe to be in right now is the local menu.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I continue. I agree with what you guys are saying. This is a lot of fun. There's some fun kind of like one-liners at the end, and, you know, it's impressive what it's all encompassing. You know, it's telling a bigger story by going back to smaller moments in a very unique kind of cool way. The art's impressive. It's also fun.
Makes me want to be a local man. I'm a local man.
I would love to live in a town. X-Force number 50 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy. Oh, gosh. Thank you so much. Written by Benjamin Percy, art by Robert Gill. This is the final issue of this title as we get to the end of the Beast versus Beast storyline. Simplest version possible. There is a beast who has become a genocidal maniac who is trying to suck all the mutant kind that is left into a black hole. Meanwhile, the beast From back in the day, the Oh My Stars and Garters Beast is trying to stop him. Spoilers for this. By the end of the issue, Wonder Man, who is a pacifist, decides to sacrifice himself to stop Beast. And ultimately, the older Beast stops him, dies in the process. And we get the wrap up of X-Force doing their thing while younger Beast and Wonder Man get into an apartment together. Here's my big issue with this. I thought this was the stuff with Beast. The action with that was great. Like, really well done. Very emotional. All the stuff with Wonder Man was excellent. All the stuff with X-Force felt like, let's distract them with something else going up over here so we can focus on Beast having an emotional catharsis. And then at the end, we wrapped up very quickly. It felt like it needed two more pages or something like that to just kind of really give it the room, because it wrapped up so succinctly, so quickly.
I think that's fair. But, like, let's remember, this at the end of this issue joins up with the Wolverine-Sabretooth War, like, a month ago. Like, yeah. It links up with five issues back on the Wolverine title. So I think it was sort of like, we have to get this out there before too much more time passes, or else it won't really fit together. But I agree with you. I like the way that this X-Force series has become, like, this Beast Wolverine dichotomy. And we get to see, love Wonder Man, love seeing him here.
Yeah, you love Wonder Man.
I do.
That's your guy.
I also love that they don't pull away from, like, Beast, the bad Beast philosophy. He's like, no, I'm right. This is, sorry, young Beast, but you don't get it. I've seen some shit, and I need to put all the mutants in a black hole. And he doesn't waver, and the book isn't like he's wrong at any point. So that's philosophically interesting to me.
Well, I hard disagree. I don't understand. There was a ton of Beasts, and then the evil Beast, and then you had a kind of split teams of people who were for this insane Beast, and then people were against this insane Beast. And then you had the younger Beast fighting the older Beast, and the older Beast's only defense of saying we have to kill everybody with a black hole gun is, I've seen some shit.
I was just like, what?
Beast is supposed to be smart, and he can't even talk to another version of him to convince it of anything it was saying. And it was,
but
just,
you love Beast, Pete.
I like a smart Beast because that makes sense to me. But this Beast is just doesn't seem smart, and it's just saying, I've been through a harder life than you, younger Beast. And I just didn't, it wasn't good enough decision or makes sense or worth all of the fighting that's happened. Wolverine versus evil Beast, all of that was over. I just want to kill everybody with a black hole gun.
Black hole gun. Pete, let me hit you with
I felt like I've been taking crazy pills. Like, how is this a thing?
And let me say, we switched your vitamins.
He wants to blow up Mars? Like, that's the thing? That's what we did all this for? And then
becoming,
it was just like, oh, crazy old man Beast, you're a curmudgeon and life is beating you down.
Couple follow-ups.
What?
We did switch.
What is happening?
We switched your vitamins for crazy pills. A. B, he does want to blow up Mars because that's going to become a dominion and kill everything. C, I want to hit you with a little Pete LePage-style trivia quiz. What's your favorite Beast? Bad Beast? Stars and Garters, good Beast? Good old no-fur naked Beast? Or Beast, this is D, Beast from Beauty and the Beast? Or E, Elijah Dushku?
Yeah, I have to go with E on this one. Yeah, I get what your point is that no Beast is actually a good Beast, and I guess they're all bad, is what you're saying. So
they're all mid. I think they're all mid is
wow.
The real thing.
Yeah. Look at you.
Well, anyway, why don't we move on?
Alex,
nothing to say to that. Did you?
Good line, Alex. Did you want to answer?
Did this make any sense to you?
No, I'm trying to decide whether I should admit something that I've never admitted out loud or not.
Yes, what? Alex.
Yes,
admit
come on.
Something.
Okay, so, oh my gosh, I feel very uncomfortable about this. So, you know how Wonder Man is constantly like, I'm a pacifist in this issue?
Yeah.
That was an idea. I won't mention his name, and please don't mention his name, but an idea by a friend of mine that he mentioned to me, and I came up with a whole pitch for how Wonder Man could be a pacifist for a series back in the day. As far as I know, that was pitched to Marvel. It was turned down. And then a certain author that went by the initials BMB ended up being like, hey, what if Wonder Man was a pacifist? And then worked that into New Avengers, where it continued to go from there until this very day when Wonder Man has been a pacifist. So,
wow, hot take from Alex Alvin.
That's something that, like, as a personal experience, holds me back a little bit because I had a whole thing about that. But, like, I don't know. I like him as a pacifist. I like Wonder Man. I like Wonder Beast. I think the pairing is good.
So you like Beast from Beauty and the Beast?
I do.
Which Beast do you like?
Tale as old as time. I got to say, Amazon's Attack, number 6 for DC Comics.
This is
Comics,
a great issue.
Written by Joseph Campbell, art by Vasco Georgiev. This is, I believe, the final issue of this series.
Yes.
As we get our team of Amazons and Mary Marvel discovering who has been plaguing them, this entire time, and fighting against it. Great issue, great series. Joseph Campbell doing a great job. Vasco Georgiev doing a great job on art. I really enjoyed this. What did you guys think?
Yes, cool covers. Really did a great job landing the plane here. This ending is fantastic. Really has such a cool arc. It was a great to go on this kind of journey with them. Loved all the action. Loved the team up aspects of it. Teamwork makes the dream work here. And this is just a perfect example of this. Please give this team more projects because this was awesome.
Yeah, I agree. It built really well. I feel like my favorite issue of the series, I think, was the last one. Number 5.
Okay.
And this one just paid everything off really well. But I just loved everything was just really the threads came together so cleanly and strongly, I think, to a huge setup last issue, which I loved. And then everything just blows up this issue in a great way. This series really just was really nicely paced out.
Great.
Cable, number 3 from Marvel, written by Fabian Nicieza, art by Scott Eaton, and Lad Medina. We're getting Cable and young Cable are teaming up to fight against a bunch of mutants who have created some dark versions of mutants. I guess that's the best.
Clones. They're cloning.
My two Cables.
There you go. What'd you guys think about this?
It would be tough to team up with an older or younger version of yourself.
Yeah, really? I mean, eventually you're just going to pull a gun on them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like we get there at the end of the issue. We won't spoil what happens, but
I think we just did.
Well, you might be able to guess, but I will say it could only go one way. It couldn't go the other way. That's a real mistake. Let's be honest, Looper point of view.
Oh, Looper. Okay.
But this series is fun. The narration of the older Cable being like, yeah, this kid's annoying. It's just really funny. He's talking about himself the whole time. So I like that energy. There are a couple jokes in this book. Like Fabian knows how to sort of do that while not taking away from any of the action. They like to roll up to an office building fully stocked with weapons.
Oh, yeah. If you're going to go to a corporate setting, you got to be ready. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that all you had to say, Pete?
Yeah, I did the my two dads joke.
Under York, number one from Image Comics, written by Sylvan Runberg, art by Mirka Andolfo. This is about a woman who is just trying to do her art exhibit. But of course, there is a secret demonic city under the city that sucks her into it. I was really looking forward to this because nothing gets Mirka Andolfo, but I feel like a lot of her stuff is wild and out there. So I was interested to see what she does as the artist for another writer.
Hmm.
This is wild and out there, and there's a lot of stuff going on. I like the place that they end up at in terms of we have a pentagram city with different districts where you have to kind of like fight your way through. Very cool. But everything leading up to that in terms of the art world is a lot.
Well, it's funny. I had that sort of the opposite opinion. I liked the art world stuff. And then at the end of the issue, we get sort of a premise bomb where it's sort of like, yeah, it's actually a secret underworld under the city where there's a five different cities in Pedoran and have to fight your way through. I was like, whoa, I thought this is sort of a chill demonic art book. But instead, it spins out into a much larger world. And it just caught me off guard in a way.
You know, this reminded me of when I first moved to New York City. I thought New York would be a lot more of this, you know what I mean? Getting pulled into these demon underworlds, having all these secret magical creatures flying around and stuff like that. So, yeah, pretty disappointed in the real life New York City, but...
Well, you did get pulled into the Pit underground basement comedy theater.
Yeah, that's true. There was one pit I didn't survive. But I do think that...
that's where we were Jedi married, just to be clear.
Yeah, that's true. And the underground, the belly of the beast, so to speak. But I did think the art was great. The kind of the verses of it all was fun. So as far as the first issue, I appreciated what we're setting up and what we're getting excited for to come.
Predator, The Last Hunt, number two from Marvel, written by Ed Bryson, art by Francesca Abana. In this issue, John Schaefer, the brother of Dutch.
Yeah, Dutch's brother.
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
He shows up. He showed up at the cliffhanger, but turns out he's kind of a helpful guy who is helping out our main character, trying to figure out the mystery of what the Predators are up to. Of course, what they're up to is hunting, as we find out in the
surprise.
Yeah, I wrote down like, yeah, no shit that you just walked into a trap. They're fucking Predators.
I do like
Dutch's
the fact that
brother
John Schaefer is a little more heroic than I expected.
From his Hawaiian shirt.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything about these series go so much harder than I thought they would. I really like them. I like the art. I like the story. I like following it. What do you guys think?
I mean, for much as I was making fun of the G.I. Joe character reveal, I feel like this book had that where it's like, look, it's Dutch's brother. I was like, what? Or they don't even say that. It's John Schaefer. I was like, John Schaefer, the most regular name in America? okay. And so, like, it is that same energy. But I agree with you. Like, I do like this book. Even though it's a lot of wild ideas that the Predators have gathered people from across time to hunt. And they're all here being like, yeah, we're just having coffee, waiting for them to show up and try to hunt us. Is still working and it's still fun.
I mean, that's the thing about setting traps for humans. You know what I mean? You got to sit there, have your coffee and wait for them to stumble into it. I think
and
this is
great bait coffee for a human trap.
Yes, agreed. I think it's kind of funny, you know, Predator, The Last Hunt, number two. But I do think that, how many different...
You're saying they're going to hunt again.
Stories. Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Hmm. I think the amount of time they spent, particularly this issue with John Schaefer being like, where's my brother? I hope I can find my brother. Arnold has to show up at some point.
He's a pretty busy guy, dude. You know what I mean?
I don't know.
Governor for a while.
He doesn't have to sit for a painting of it. He could just be drawn in.
I think it needs to show up. The other thing that I'll throw out at you that I saw somebody zeding or posting or whatever. I don't even know what platform it was on.
Did you say zeding?
Yeah, tweeting, but it's X, so it's zeding.
No, that means something else, Alan.
I thought you were like saying you were watching someone yeet, you know what I mean? Just throwing something across the room.
Yeah, like yeeting, yeah. I saw somebody post this up, and I thought this was such a great idea for where Marvel can go. They were like, they posted a still of Planet of the Apes and Predator, and they were like, I don't know, what did you think? And that is such a great place this could go is don't do it in a movie. We don't need to see it in a movie necessarily, but like do a Marvel comic where the Predator is hunting Planet of the Apes. Great. I'm into it.
Four issues. Easy.
Absolutely.
I'd be into it only if the Predator wins at the end.
Wow. You hate monkeys.
How many more wins do the Predators need, Pete?
The Oddly Pedestrian Life of Christopher Chaos, number 8 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Tate Bromble, art by Sue Lee. We're continuing the arc that is retelling the story of Frankenstein through the queer lens of this title. And I think it is great. The end. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, this one was a little bit more kind of sweeter because you got the blonde bucket girl who, you know, befriends the giant bloody monster guy. Yeah, I think this is interesting, and I'm having a good time with it. The art's fantastic. Kind of brings you into this time period really well, and I'm excited to see what's going to happen, you know?
I love that they took the time to really get into the Frankenstein's monster story and fully tell it in relation to all the other stuff, which is there's a lot going on in sort of the main story. So to take a couple issues and really get into this, I think is great. I've been really enjoying it. I love I haven't seen Frankenstein's story has been told a million times. I haven't seen it told this way. It's very uniquely done. Definitely, even if you haven't been following the series, picking up this issue and the previous issue is just a great standalone two-part of a new retelling of the Frankenstein story.
The Amazing Spider-Man, number 46 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by Carmen Carnero. In this issue, Spider-Man and Jackpot are teaming up to fight against the Ravencroft Asylum, which is having a breakout. I thought this issue was great. I know we've been kind of down/mixed against Spider-Man, but this has everything that I want. Spider-Man quipping, feeling conflicted about his relationship with MJ, some villain stuff, Sinister Six things picking up. I had a good time.
Do you think, because I know that Marvel has meetings and plans stuff out months and months in advance, if not years, do you think it just kind of like some days just line up and we get all jackpot on one Wednesday? And it, you know, or are they purposely over jackpotting us right now? Because I feel over jackpotted.
I think it's probably more of a coincidence than anything. I agree with you, Alex. I did like this issue. I like focusing on those emotional beats, but again, like I was saying before, this is where I'm like, can we just deal with that relationship for a while? I want to sit in some of the story rather than just blazing through into a larger Sinister Six story that is going to not deal with the Mary Jane stuff, which is what I want.
But at the same time, the stuff with Mary Jane's aunt I thought was great.
Yeah.
And really well done. Why don't we move on and talk about Green Arrow, number 10 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson.
That's all the time we have. I'm sorry.
Wow. Turnabout.
Green Arrow is teaming up with Amanda Waller and encounters a number of members of the Arrow family in this issue. What did you fellows think?
I think this is very sweet. I mean, there's some touching hugs in here, you know. Families checking up on themselves after almost fighting each other, you know. I mean, great art, fun storytelling. Can't wait for more, but you got to stop saying brain bomb. Or is it more, is it they said it so many times it's funny at this point? I'm not sure. I feel like I'm a couple short of it being funny, and it's just kind of like stop with the brain bomb.
Yeah, I got bad news for you, Pete. There's going to be a lot more brain bombs
because that's
Waller's whole thing. She must have a brain bomb surgeon on retainer who's just dropping them in, you know? And that's kind of, it's not the easy surgery, I would think.
You would, yeah.
Dropping in a brain bomb? You can't, because you got to put it all the way in. You can't just put it on top. You know what I mean? You got to put it in the middle. The other, this issue, you know, I talk a lot about how, like, for instance, the Flash family, it feels like there's just so many Flashes, it's hard to balance them. This issue, like, is saying, hey, here's this whole Arrow family. But I thought this worked because it kept the emotional through line of Oliver just going after, after Red Arrow, trying to get to the bottom of it. And It was nice, I thought.
Wolverine number 46 from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy and Victor Laval, art by Corey Smith. In this issue, Sabretooth has brainwashed Wolverine and is tricking him into thinking they are going on a mission when they are on Team X or whatever it's called back in the day. He's not. It's way worse than that. He's doing some terrible things, and it ends up in a terrible place for Wolverine. I love the stakes that are so high here, but Justin, curious to hear from you, because I know you love this issue.
I have been loving this, and when we first came upon the Sabretooth War, I was like, wow, this is so many issues. What are they going to do to really tell this story over that long a timeline? And what they're doing is just like really having a strong premise and take on each issue. This one, like the classic brainwash of Wolverine, which seems to happen so often. His Yep. brain is fully washed. And it's told in a visually interesting way. It has some shade, I feel like, playing off of Old Man Logan, some fears we have of what happened in that story, that's happening here. And I continue to love the Quentin Quire as a floating head who talks shit, but is also capitulating to Sabretooth. I think that's really well done.
Yeah, I agree that the talking head is fun. But yeah, I mean, the hard part for me is that I've seen this numerous times where Sabretooth tricks Wolverine to doing his dirty work, but then Wolverine's going to find out and he's going to be fucking pissed, man. And he's going to come after Wolverine. It's something we've seen a lot, but I guess it's fun. And it's nice because, you know, Sabretooth remembers Wolverine's birthday, and that's the important thing.
Mm-hmm. That's the important thing.
I agree. Six Fingers, number two from Image Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Sumit Kumar. We are following two parallel miniseries, as in this one, we see a potential killer who may be reincarnated or something like that, of a killer who has Six Fingers. And meanwhile, in the other series, One Hand, we're following the cop who is chasing him down. This is really well done, very complex. I do not know what to trust or what to believe, which is the whole point of it. And that part is very impressive.
Yeah, you got it, kind of that the spinning top moment of like what's real, what's not. Mm-hmm. And it's this cool idea that if you look at a clock in a dream, that's how you know if you're dreaming or not.
But true.
We don't really know what's real and what's not in this comic, and that's a very cool, interesting, when it's done well, and I think it is here, it's a very cool story, fantastic art. I think this is interesting. I'm excited to check this out, and I'm a sucker for the old six-finger man being the bad guy because of, hello, my name is Amigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
Flawless impression. I never look at clocks because I don't want to know if I'm dreaming or not.
Ooh. You know?
Just don't look at clocks. Don't trust clocks. Clocks are lying to you. I like it. This is such a nice just comic experiment, these two twinned titles coming out together. And it's hard to tell. It felt like in the first issues, it was like, oh, one's a hero and one's the killer. And I don't think that's actually accurate. And we're starting to really just upset that original duality there in a nice way.
The Incredible Hulk, number 10 from Marvel, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Danny Earls. In this issue, the Hulk is confronting Frozen Charlotte, who is different from Good Charlotte, I believe. And
the band.
Teaming up, yes, of course. And teaming up with Ghost Detective, which is different from the band.
The band?
Yes, the bad. Anyway, some horror stuff is going on here. What did you guys think about this one?
Well, it's amazing.
You're a Ghostbusters guy.
Yeah, I love Ghostbusters. Busting makes me feel good. But I think it's, frankly, we're overbusted right now. We'll get to Ghostbusters in a second. But
you're overbusted.
Yeah.
You're busted.
Yeah, overbusted. First off, fantastic cover. Yeah, I think that the Hulk versus the kind of Mother of Angels is like a really creepy, unbelievable villain that freaks me the fuck out. I think it's a kind of a great story because Hulk is the hero in this, and we clearly have someone who's stealing children, so they are bad. So, yeah, I think this fits perfectly in this kind of nightmare world that we're going to.
The art, it feels like a slight departure from what we've had before in this series, where we're still doing the horror stuff, but it's in just a different tone. And I don't mind it. I think Philip Kennedy Johnson is telling sort of a haunted story in some ways, where it feels a little bit disjointed. We're sort of watching, we're as confused as the Hulk is throughout. And, that is, we don't get that. I feel like we're always just watching the Hulk, and this, it feels like we are the Hulk throughout it. It continues to be a
That's
very
how I
different...
live every day of my life as the Hulk.
Truth. Feels good.
Ghostbusters Back in Town, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by David M. Booher, art by Blue Delaquanti. This is a bridge between Ghostbusters Afterlife and Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which is in theaters now. I think in terms of that, it does a fine job.
Yeah, I think this is kind of like a fun, kind of bright, more cartoony take on the Ghostbusters here, which is a nice kind of Saturday morning cartoon kind of vibe. And I think it's a fun way to kind of tell some, Ghostbuster stories, especially when they're back in town, number one. Love the action towards the end. Last panel is a fun teaser. I think this is enjoyable. But overall, I was talking about how I'm over-ghosted.
You're over-busted.
Yeah, I just think it's... Like the original Ghostbusters movie, there's a lot of it that doesn't hold up, but the idea of it, the comedy points of it are really fun. The underdog kind of the whole thing of it. Some fantastic lines. But we're getting so many kind of remakes and stuff of it. I feel a little bit like something that I loved is no longer there anymore in the stuff that is being sold to me. I appreciated this.
It's funny that you're overexposed. That's are you saying because it's sort of different? It's deviating from a lot of.
Well, I think it's like. The Transformers, like I love the Transformers cartoon growing up. The animated movie was amazing. But then when they started making these new movies, it was clear it was not for me. You know what I mean? So I feel
like,
a little bit
Transformers Age of Extinction.
Was that the one with the balls? Then no. The Transformers that had balls?
I don't know.
Yeah, you know.
Truck nuts?
Yeah, the truck nuts. That was
Prime Optimus Prime nuts?
Yeah, that's when I lost it a little bit. But the Bumblebee movie was good. I like that one.
I mean, I agree with you. I feel like this Ghostbusters book is heading in a different direction, and it feels like it's a lot of business for something. It really does feel like it's doing a lot of narrative work when a plot work. And I'm like, I don't think this book has to work so hard. It could just be like a fun story. It was like, I'm not dying to connect these most recent movies. You could do a much simpler job of doing that.
Rise of the Powers of X, number 3 from Marvel, written by Karen Gillan, art by R.B. Silva. I hope you're ready for a deep dive here, because a ton of stuff is going down in this issue as Professor Xavier travels back in time to kill Moira MacTaggert before she gets her mutant gift, only, spoiler, to be stopped by Rasputin IV, who discovers that Doug Ramsey is a dupe of Mr. Sinister. So, wild stuff going on here. And that's only like half of the crazy things that happened in this issue. Again, this is a Kieran Gillen book. I know I've said this before with this late stage X-Men stuff. If you haven't been reading everything Kieran Gillen has been reading, I have literally no idea how this would work for you. But as somebody who has, this has so many oh shit moments. It's great. Like, it's super dense. It is hard to read. You need to concentrate on absolutely everything. It is deep continuity. But the stuff that's going on here is, for a hardcore fan, I think, phenomenal.
Yeah, it's like Optimus Prime's like robot balls from the Transformers movie. It's like a very dense, compact amount of story pressed in here. I agree. I like this, but I do like
hip bearded Charles Xavier going back in time for the old. Well, I'll just go and kill Hitler as a baby, but it's Moira as a little girl.
Well, that is definitely, I think,
a reference. You think that's a fun way to spend time?
Well, I think, I don't want to say what happens at the end, but like, he has to make a choice. The big takeaway I have from this issue is like, and we've seen in sort of the revelations of what the next titles are coming down the line after the reboot, post-Krakoa reboot from the X-Men franchise. And I think we need a real reset on old Charles Xavier, because we need like a standalone series where he can just be a person for a while, because he was
a lollipop. Now he's just kind of like bearded walking around.
He's a mess right now. He's someone who like is a villain a lot. He is also the ultimate icon and inspiration for the X-Men from the get-go. So like, for a character to occupy both of those poles, I think we need something that just puts a flag in who he is, because now he's sort of more on the villain side and we don't know what he's up to or what his intentions are, and he doesn't tell us. So
is it weird every time I see him walking, I think, oh, this is the villain?
Because you want him to be sitting down?
I don't know.
Whenever I see somebody walking, I say, that's a
can't trust him.
Yeah.
Can't trust it.
Somna, number 3 from Distillery by Becky Cloonan and Tula Lote. This is the final issue of this series that repaints the Salem witch trials in a new way. I think that's the easiest way of putting it. This is a gorgeous book. Very well told, with some very sad, very dark character moments throughout. What did you guys think?
Yeah, artistically, it's really impressive what they're doing, especially like the kind of like touching the mirror pond kind of panels and that kind of stuff. But yeah, there's still a lot of demons trying to fuck in this issue. So, you know, fun.
Well, and just to touch on, like, it's a great book. I really enjoyed the story. But to really emphasize the art, because like, it has an art jam style to it, where like, it's not like long passages and then an exchange of between the two artists. It really does like go sometime from page to page with Becky Cloonan and Tula Lotay's art existing side by side, and it still remains a seamless story in a way that no other, like very few books can pull off. And so that's great. It's just great. I really enjoyed this top to bottom. It's a very different feeling book. I think Distillery's putting out some interesting different stuff, and this book is maybe the best exemplar of that.
Yeah, because on paper, it doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? This idea of two artists kind of telling the same story, I think it would be confusing, but artistically what it's pulling off and is really impressive.
The Flash, Thunderbolts, number 4 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing, art by Geraldo Borges. In this issue, I believe the final issue of the series, at least for now,
we are getting
Bucky coming with his team for Red Skull and trying to manipulate Dr. Doom at the same time. This was a well-structured series with some real stakes that I hope they continue.
Great, just countdown issue. We got 10 minutes. Dr. Doom's like, hey, man, 10 minutes, I'm coming for you. And we're getting that ticking clock through the whole issue. And then I won't spoil it, but the way it's played at the end, I thought was really well done. Kelly and Lansing do a great job of just having a strong format for all of their issues. And this is no different. I would like to see more of this Thunderbolts team. And shouts to, we talked about this before, but shouts to the Black Widow symbiote character holding strong, making it work. It's still working for me.
I think this is a fun issue. Bucky taking on the Red Skull, calling him Schmidt. That's fun stuff. A great splash pages, great action. And, Bucky and Nat have a little adorable moment. So
the relish is back on. The relish. Something I loved way back in the day. One of the more romantic relationships in Marvel Comics from the last 10 to 15 years. Great to have. Tragic the way it ended in the past. Great to have it back on. And let's just call it a threesome because that symbiote is in there too.
The Flash, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Cy Spurrier, art by Ramon Perez. In this issue, we've got a couple of folks that are trying to track down what's going on with the Speed Force and things around that, and they end up running directly into some timekeeper-type characters who are working against them. I don't know. There's a lot going on in this book. What'd you guys think?
Hey, well, I just real quick. Are you down on this, Alex? You're the Flash guy.
Yeah, you're the Flash guy.
It feels
guy.
Like this is this hit going too far?
And you're a Wally
for you?
Guy.
I really like this a lot. I think like this horror inflected take is really working for me. I mean, this issue is Ramon Perez, but normally it's Mike Deodato Jr. and their darker, more shaded work, I think, is really nice. It just feels very different from any other run on the Flash. I'm not a huge fan of, like, here's how the Flash's powers work. Now we're going to totally change them. And there are different stratospheres that he operates in. But it's working here because emotionally, it's throwing Wally and Barry in a very different place. So,
well, it's just pointing out flaws. I feel like Flash characters just rarely have flaws. Mm-hmm. And we get a reference to Identity Crisis here, something that, Heroes in Crisis, something that I think a lot of people maybe don't like, but another place where a Flash is given a big flaw. And I actually think that works here. And seeing all of the different Flashes not doing a great job is refreshing for this little pocket of the DC universe. And I agree, like all the heady physics and sci-fi stuff is really working here. I love the introduction of the linear men here, something mm-hmm. I haven't seen before. I thought that was really cool. The art's awesome. This has been definitely my favorite Flash series in a long time.
Yeah, I agree. The art is awesome. And I also agree with Wally that I don't care what's going on in the world. I couldn't run by donuts. I would have to stop and eat one because, I mean, let's face it, they're donuts.
Yeah. You talk about Impulse loves donuts. Oh, I guess everyone loves donuts. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all right. Superior Spider-Man.
Oh, wow.
How dare you, sir?
Okay, Alex, how about this? I'm going to set a trap for you sometime in the next month where you're going to be going about your business. There's going to be donuts, and I'm going to see if you're going to stop.
You've had donuts before, right? I mean, you've eaten donuts.
Not yet.
They're like bagels.
But you've been
bagels.
You've gone to Krispy Kreme when the red light comes on and they're fresh and warm.
I've been to what now?
Pete, would you wait outside Krispy Kreme for the red light to come on? Wow. For those of you listening, Pete made a are you talking to me face? He made a
when you go to Amsterdam, that's what red light district means.
Yeah.
All Krispy Kremes, all up and down. It's very erotic, weirdly, and it's just donuts.
Superior Spider-Man number 5 from Marvel, written by Dan Slott and Christos Gage, art by Mark Bagley. In this issue, Peter Parker is teaming up with Otto Octavius to try to take down Electric Lady, who has taken Adam Marconi hostage. I don't know. I haven't learned your name yet. I'm sorry. Oh.
I just thought you hated her from the way you were saying her name. I was like, why do you hate her?
She's fine. It's fine.
Okay, it seems like you got some stuff.
Do you not like this?
Yeah, this is for you. They're doing this.
This is your thing.
Yeah, this is your.
Is it?
Yeah, you love Superior Spider-Man.
I like this team up. The villain is whatever.
Wow!
You're just so down on her. You haven't even learned her name.
What's her name?
Her name.
Pull it up. Anyways,
Supernova.
I think that Dan Slott's clearly having a grand old time. And I know I say this all the time, but I'm over the Superior BS. So the fact that they're keeping this going with the reveal at the end here. It's a little disconcerting, but it's great to see Dan Slott having so much fun and bringing Christos Gage along for the fun ride. And the Mark Bagley art's great, but I'm kind of done being with the superiors. If the kids are having fun, then let's go for it.
If the Spider Boys are having fun, let them be Spider Boys. You know, I mean, this is like they're. You should know what you're getting into when you pick up this. This is like pure Dan Slott, Christos Gage, Mark Bagley, Superior Jam Sesh. You know the vibe. You know the jokes. You know the world. Like, it's such a... I got to shout out this team for just being able to deliver new stories that hit their tone. That's hard to do over a long period of time, and they're doing it. And it seems like, based on the way this issue ends, they're going to continue to do it.
Yeah, it seems like it.
The Dead Lucky, number 12 from Image Comics, written by Melissa Flores, art by French Carlo Mago. This is the final issue of this title, for at least for now, as the Dead Lucky takes it to the forces that have been fighting against her in San Francisco. I know you guys have been big fans of the series. How do you feel about how it wrapped up?
Yeah, I feel dead lucky.
Oh, great. You want to keep talking? Oh, okay.
No, you go.
All right. Well, badass stuff. Just great. Amazing ending. Love the art. Love the style. It's very cool. Great action. Touching ending. I really enjoyed the story arc. Reading this last one, I want to go back and read it all again because I feel like this did such a great job with the ending that I don't want it to end. So I want to kind of go back and relive it all again. But yeah, this was such a cool world created by them, and I think well executed.
It's sort of the wooliest part of the Massiverse, sort of out on the edge. Mm-hmm. But I like the tone this brought. It was different. Always keeping its sights on the a superhero take on PTSD.
Yeah.
And I would like to see it continue. It got a little complicated with the plot of everything by the end. But there was a sweet spot in sort of the early middle that I thought was just great storytelling. Would love to see more Dead Lucky in a new storyline.
You didn't think it was a touching ending with the...
No, it was touching. But I'm just saying, like, the story got a little big and it lost touch with sort of the parts that I liked in the early and middle.
Daredevil number 7 from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Aaron Cooter. In this issue, as Daredevil continues to deal with the 7 deadly sins, one of them, we won't say who, infests Wolverine, who comes directly for Daredevil. Gotta say, appreciate a good Wolverine Daredevil fight. I do not know why Daredevil is not torn to ribbons at the end.
Well, there was a part where there's a cut in Daredevil's arm, and I was like, oh damn, that of course Wolverine would tear Daredevil to pieces. I also like the description of Wolverine as a lead pipe with meat wrapped around it. I was like, that's legit. That's what Wolverine is. It's a meat pipe. And that's, I'll never think of him differently. So I really like that. I like that we've nailed the premise here that it's Daredevil versus his sins, and they're taking possession of his friends. Shame about his white costume turning completely. I feel like by the end of it, it's fully red.
You get a new outfit, you show up at the bar, and Wolverine's there, it's all over. I mean, there it goes. Yeah. There goes your really nice
blood, red wine.
Yeah.
I love at the end, Wolverine's like pretty chill about it. He's like, yeah, man, I get possessed all the time. Let's grab a couple of drinks. Like, he was the most chill.
Yeah, I mean, it says a lot about how much Wolverine has been through, and then how much we have as a reader, where it's like, oh yeah, Wolverine's possessed again. Yep. Well, just buy him a drink at the end of the night. He'll be cool with it. I think this is a blast. I also think that's, you know, it's interesting that we're kind of still exploring this more religious version of Daredevil. I mean, I was having fun with the story, but then it was a little bit weird when he was like, oh, I'll cleanse him through this water and that will get rid of the demon. And I was just like, I don't know. I thought it had to be holy water or something. But anyways, other than that, this was a blast. Amazing art. I'm enjoying this fun last panel.
It's very funny to compare this with the the Wolverine from the X-Men, the animated series, where he's miserable. He's like, I'll kill you, Scott Summers. at the same time in this, he's just like totally chill.
Chill.
Masterpiece number 4 from Dark Horse Comics, written by Brian Michael Bendis, art by Alex Maleev. This issue, Masterpiece is turning the tables on the people who are attacking her. What did you guys think about this one?
Well, this is
like that we're getting the team together. We get a nice late addition to the team. This is classic, just Bendis scripting, going hard in his lane, which is, you know, I feel like Bendis has been sort of going out and trying to do different things. This feels like a real return to form in a good way.
Yeah, I think this is just kind of like a badass spy killer thriller kind of thing where you got a real chess match being played, lives at stake, people getting fucked up. A great art, interesting, cool.
And if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m.
We sure do.
And YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Huge Ooh. Reveal, Colonel Crabclaw is at the end of this podcast.
What?
Your favorite Joe.
It's Bat.
Crap, baby.